Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Folks, we're back. It is episode 71, which is two more than 69, of Biscuits, Colon, a Hockey Podcast. I am Dave. Dave Lozo is my full name. David Lozo is my official name. But I go by Dave because my dad's name was David, so I don't know how I ever decided that, but it just kind of happened. Here in Brooklyn, it's not really hockey season, but I'm going to talk hockey with my good buddy Sean in Ottawa. Hi, Sean.
Hey, everybody. It's Sean up here in Ottawa, home of Erik Karlsson. Still. Not that we're bothered by that at all. Nope. Not that we plan to keep doing a podcast into mid to late July because we figured...
Yep,
there would be trades and stuff to talk about.
We're running out of runway, as they say.
Not that we're regretting that decision at all. But today's show is going to be 20 minutes on arbitration and then 40 minutes of me talking about my kids' softball championship games from the weekend. So
it's like, man, yeah. He stole second, which you don't really do in softball, but it was a great play. You know, it's a kids' game, so they can do whatever they want out there. And they won 41-40. I haven't played softball in forever. I'm old now. Like, I used to play shortstop all the time. I kind of miss doing that, but like, I feel like I'm too old now. If I go back and play, I got to play like first because I'm tall and I'm just a big goofy target for athletic young people at short, which is kind of depressing. I don't know why I thought of that just now, but boy,
we got the scouting report.
Can't move left or right or in or back anymore. Oh God, when you're 40, like I run and stuff. Like I'm so prepared at some point to just like step on like an uneven sidewalk and have like something explode in my knees or my Achilles. This is the stuff you think about when you get older, is how rolling over in the middle of the night might hurt your back.
I'm gonna tell you how old I am, and just from a physical standpoint, because this is a completely true story. My daughter was playing in the championship game of her league. They're playing against a team that has not lost all year. They
How
win
old?
The game. This is like grades 4, 5, and 6. So 11 through 13 or something like that. Her team wins the game in the bottom of the last inning on a walk-off grand slam.
Wow.
It was great. Yeah. It was honestly one of like the three best sporting events I've ever been to live. But...
Was it like a little league grand slam where she just ran around the bases and no one could field it, or did she crank one over the fence?
It was not her. She was actually on deck when this happened. So she's Alfredo Griffin in this story. But the guy cranked it. But it's little league, so there's no fences. You're not clearing the fence. You just hit it like over the outfielder's head, and he ran.
Okay.
Where I come in on this story is I'm the third base coach, so I got to wave 4 runs home. That might have been the most exercise I've had. And I think I came like 80% of the way there towards tearing a rotator cuff. Just trying to get... Because at that age, kids don't know to run. Like, they just run to the base and then they look at you. So you got to like... Yeah, it's...
Really? At 11 or 12? That's like little league age.
A lot of them... Well, it's hit and miss. Let's put it that way.
Yeah? Well, hockey's your sport up there. It's not really baseball, right? So
exactly. We're all very confused. You throw us out there with the... We're like, why is the ball round? Why are there not tiny nets that we're trying to throw it into?
Why are we hitting pitches with stuffed beavers? Like, why? That seems too Canadian. Maybe just get bats.
Exactly.
I don't know. How about that?
Home plate is a literal plate with just poutine on it, and it's all very strange.
Everybody,
Dave and I are trying
Joey
very
Votto's
hard not
jersey.
to. Yeah, sorry. We're trying very hard not to talk about the NHL right now because...
I mean, we got to fill an hour, so, you know, we just probably BS at the beginning and then slide. Is it time to slide?
And then BS in the middle and BS at the end? That sounds like a plan.
Hey.
All right. Well, what has happened in the last week in the NHL?
Well, the Jacob Trouba thing, I feel like, was a really kind of a big thing, but it happened in, like, late July, and nobody really paid attention to it because it was in late July. It was an arbitration hearing that actually went to the arbitrator, and there was no agreement made, and they let the arbitrator decide. And
That arbitrator, it's a tough job.
I know. Like,
you got to weigh the pros and cons. Took him 2 days to come up with his decision, which is that he would just
right down the middle.
Right down the middle. Add up the two numbers, divide by two. Landings. Like, what are the odds?
What do you think he got paid for that? Like, because he's probably a lawyer who does it, right? So, like, it's hourly fees to just sit there for, like, however long it takes to hear both sides of the argument. Then you take 2 days. I'm assuming, like, all those hours between then and his decision are billable hours. Man, I got to become an arbitrator.
Yeah.
That's a good gig.
It's got to be one of the best jobs on the planet because, yeah, you just sit there while it's, I mean, the whole process is so messed up because you bring your player in, you tear him down for several hours. Apparently this hearing went for quite a while. And then you just wind up at the number we all knew you were... Like, why would you not just say, like, all right, what's your number? What's our number? Let's just do a deal in the middle because that's where we're going to wind up anyway. So let's not go in there and crap all over each other.
Like, I would never... Like in baseball, for instance, like, I have a theory that Marcus Stroman's having such a bad season because he went to arbitration and, like, he heard the team say terrible things about him, and he's gone from, like, being a very consistently good pitcher to, like, I don't know, feeling like he has to prove himself because, like, something just seems off. I mean, I'm not in Toronto, so, like, maybe he's just pitching badly, but, like, it just seems like...
You have Marcus Stroman on your fantasy team, don't you?
No, I thought about picking him up this week before the game against the Orioles, and I didn't, and then he pitched really well and got a win, and I was mad at myself for not picking him up. So maybe he's going to have a good second half now that he had the blow up with the media guy. Maybe he's finally he finally got it out and now he's ready to pitch with the Blue Jays 41 games out of the playoffs.
Could be.
Man, but
welcome to Biscuits, a baseball and or softball podcast.
It's July. We have to mention baseball.
But you know what? You mentioned baseball, and it does fit with the NHL arbitration thing because in baseball, arbitration is very different. In baseball, each side picks a number, and then the arbitrator has to choose one or the other. There's no middle ground. You can't split the difference.
Is that better or worse, do you think? I can't decide.
See, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I feel like, on the one hand, I feel like it's better because it's not, at least then the arbitration hearing matters. The whole process matters. It's not this ridiculous thing in the NHL where they just split down the middle every time. But on the other hand, it's got to. I mean, if it's a miserable process to go through, as it stands, I mean, imagine if you had this. You know, this arbitrator really was picking between $4 million and $7 million for Jacob Trouba. That, I don't know, that would be pretty. That would be a rough one to lose.
Do you think like that arbitrator is like, you know, he gets through the whole hearing and like he's like really torn for 2 days. Like he's just like, you know, sitting on a back porch and he's just really just rubbing his temples and he's like, I don't know what to do. This is the hardest job ever.
Yeah.
And his wife's like, I'm an emergency room nurse. Okay. You're deciding sports people's salaries. Just pick a number so we can go to the lake and hang out with the kids. Just stop already.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
He's sitting there just completely torn. And then like she comes out and she's like, oh, I know you're having a tough time. I got us a pizza. And he's like, yeah, but how, what can we do with, there's two of us. And she's like, what? She pulls out the slicer and just slices it down the middle. And he's like, wait a second.
Hang on here.
And just jumps up from his seat and runs inside. And, oh man. Like the thing that people need to understand and is it, because I've been making fun of NHL arbitration. A lot of people have, but the thing that people may not know is if you're an NHL arbitrator, it is a sweet gig, but you can get fired by pretty much either side at any time. They can just go, well, we don't like this guy anymore, get him out of there. Both sides can do that. So that's why they always come down 50-50. You know, like if this guy had been like, you know what, Jacob Trouba is one of the better young defensemen in the NHL. He should be maybe not $7 million, maybe he's $6.5 million. the NHL just goes, oh, okay, thanks for the decision. You're fired. You're never doing one of these again. Yeah. I mean, they still have to pay it. They I mean, that the decision is final, but he'll never do another one. So the whole, like, the incentives and everything are all messed up in the system. And but I guess the bigger story is Jacob Trouba now has a one-year deal, presumably has to go through all this again next year, and then in 2020 he's an unrestricted free agent. And that has, you know, there was the whole thing in 2016. He holds out, says he wants a trade because of lack of opportunity in Winnipeg. In the 2 years since, he's emerged as, he's continued to develop as a better player. He's no longer stuck behind Tyler Myers on the depth chart. He's now probably either their first or their second best and most important defenseman. And I think a lot of people in Winnipeg figured, okay, this was the offseason where, you know, you bury the hatchet, get the long-term deal done. And instead, now he's got this one-year bargain deal he's going to play on. And I don't know, do you see him still being a Winnipeg Jet, let's say 3 years from now, or is this now, are we now on the Jacob Trouba trade watch again?
It reminds me a little bit of Ryan Johansson in Columbus. Remember how, like, he, you know, really wanted out and he was holding out and they ended up picking a number for him, and that number set up like a bigger qualifying offer the year after that, so they ended up trading him to Nashville. It's not exactly the same thing, but it just does feel like the beginning of the end, because I don't know, it just seems like he really doesn't want to be there, which is weird because, like, Winnipeg is so set up now to be good for, not just good, like, if they have goaltending now finally, like, they're set up to kind of be a contender for the next few years. Yeah. And he's 24, and I mean,
the thing with him, man, is when he had the holdout 2 years ago, he was very clear and his agent were very clear in the messaging around it that it was not about the city.
Yeah.
Was not about the team, was not about, he loved the team and his teammates and the city. It was just that he was a right-handed defenseman, was stuck behind Byfuglien and Myers on the depth chart, presumably for the long term, was basically saying, look around the league, there's tons of teams that need right-handed defensemen to play high in the lineup. He's 22. He wants an opportunity to do more than be a third-pairing guy, and he's not going to get that in Winnipeg, and that's why he wanted the trade. And in the 2 years since then, like we said, he's certainly passed Myers. He may have passed. I mean, is he and Morrissey play the tougher minutes in Winnipeg? So you could make the case that he's passed Dustin Byfuglien too on the in terms of importance to the team. So in theory, that doesn't apply anymore. And if he was telling the truth in 2016, then we shouldn't have a problem. But you kind of wonder if that was the truth, or maybe it was a little bit of positive spin and messaging on something, and he would prefer to be somewhere else. But yeah, it's tough because, well, what do you do if you're the Jets? You know, that their window is right now. They can win a Stanley Cup right now. So there's part of you that almost wonders that, I mean, if you got to do 2 1-year deals and he leaves as a free agent, let's get 2 years out of a really good player while we have a window open to win a cup, and not necessarily trade him for, you know, three quarters on the dollar just because we don't want to lose him for nothing.
What do you trade him for? Because you don't really need scoring. You're kind of loaded up there. You don't need a goalie. So
I think what you trade him for is a lefty defenseman, because that's kind of the one spot on their roster. And in theory, you'd be able to get something pretty good, because there's more teams out there who have left-handed defensemen and need right-handed defensemen than the other way around. So if you wanted to trade him, but I mean, there was also the thing where, In 2016, at least, when he asked for the trade, remember, he held out. Like, he didn't hold out because I don't think he had a contract, but he didn't report. Like, he didn't sign, and he missed the first month or so of the season. And there was a feeling at the time that the Jets had to play hardball here. You can't trade this guy who has asked for a trade because you're the Winnipeg Jets. You're considered one of the maybe the least attractive markets for players. The team wasn't very good at the time, but, you know, it's cold. You're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Is the perception, you can't trade a guy who says, I want out, because then every star player who comes to Winnipeg knows they have the option of saying, I want out. You got to play hardball. You got to say, you're a Winnipeg Jet. You're here.
Right.
put that out of your mind. But, I wonder if it's kind of the same thing here where they say, like, no, we can't. The Jets have to trade guys when it's our decision to do it, not when it's when it's the player. So it's going to be interesting to see. And it's you know, the stakes are a lot higher now because, you know, 2 years ago it was like, ah, it's the Jets, all right. Now it's the Jets. This is one of the best teams in the whole league. And this is a situation that I don't think is going to unravel this year. In fact, they can't even do a new contract until January now. But it's going to be worth watching, you know, and especially into next offseason, because in theory they got to go through this all over again and do another 1 year arbitration or another 1 year deal, and then or pay up and buy a whole bunch of UFA years, which is not going to be cheap. And I'm sure Jacob Trouba, you know, whether he loves the team in the city or not, if it comes time to do a long-term deal now, he's not given any discounts because he's been playing under discounts for 3 years now.
When Trouba goes to Cheveldayoff and says, I want to trade, do you think Cheveldayoff says, when you're a Jet all the way?
Yes. And then he probably also asks, by the way, what is a trade? Because I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff and I don't do those.
You know what else it's like too? It's like Zach Parise in Jersey, where he clearly didn't want to play in Jersey. Like sometimes guys like just don't want to play in certain cities. Like Jersey's pretty much my city, and like I get it. Like he wanted to go home and live close to his family and play for a team. Like it just happens. Like maybe Trouba, but Trouba's different though because he's still far away from really controlling his fate. And what if he gets traded somewhere else he doesn't like? You know, like grass. Mm-hmm. The grass isn't always greener on the other side. Like I've never been to Winnipeg. Like. I understand the whole cold thing, but I mean, it's cold in a lot of places once it's winter time. It's cold in New Jersey for like 3 months. Like, unless you're playing in Tampa, it's going to be cold. Like, I don't know. Like, there's got to be like, my feeling is like, if you're like a really wealthy dude, like every city is probably your oyster. You can probably find things to enjoy. And plus you're playing hockey for 8 months. Like, are you like, oh man, I can't go on to the thingy and there's no time to do anything during the season. Right. So
yeah. It's not like you've got a weekend off and there's no beach to go to. And and Winnipeg's a nice, it's a small city by NHL standards, but it's a nice place. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, this is always the feeling with Winnipeg, and same with Edmonton when they were bad. Ottawa, it's kind of the same thing. It's, you know, some players don't even know the place. They just, you know, hey, you've been traded to Ottawa, you've been traded to Winnipeg, and they look up and the wife is like, no, that's not happening. Or, you know, they're looking at their kid, you know, there's any number of reasons why you might not want to go. Or, you know, the agent says, hey, we got an offer from these guys. And you're like, no, that's... You know, same Artemi Panarin, same thing might be playing out now, where he just, you know, is not a Columbus guy. He wants to be big city, big city guy.
Trouba for Panarin, does that work? Is that a thing? No, that's not a thing.
I think that would be a thing in Winnipeg for
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That would be that would make them, that would be terrifying to see Winnipeg's forwards with that deal, and also terrifying to see Artemi Panarin's reaction to finding out that he was there.
Well, that would be
it was Cowie Leonard or whatever, where he's like, yeah, I want to be traded to LA. Yeah, okay, let's see, what's geographically the furthest location from LA? Oh, you're going to a different country.
You're going to Louisiana.
That should become like team policy. Like, if you ask for a trade to a big city, we're trading you to Winnipeg. That wouldn't really be a punishment, though. Maybe it's got to be Ottawa or whoever. But
I'd rather be in Winnipeg than Ottawa. Actually, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm not picky at this point when it comes to cities. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Problem with both Winnipeg and Ottawa and places like that, and you know, probably Edmonton too, is they're like, people always say, well, you know, they're great in the spring. Like, once you get out of that 8 month winter, it's really nice. But it's like, then the player's like, yeah, I won't be there for that. Right. Like, I'm not having my summer home there.
Well, by the way, I think Trouba should have gotten more than 5.5, but...
Oh, for sure. And again, this is... Bad. The NHL's salary scale is all messed up because he's... I mean, this guy's... Like, where would you rank him in defensemen in the league? Like,
boy, he's definitely a top-pairing defenseman, so you have to say he's at least top 31, and you probably put him top 20, top 15.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, top 20 kind of feels around where you start the conversation. I mean, a top 20 defenseman shouldn't be making 5.5 like that. That was like Brooks Orpik money. But in the NHL, it's like, well, he's, you know, but he's still young, right? He doesn't have the UFA. He's still young. He's working his way up to that. But the thing is, he's 24, 25. He's in his prime now. Like, you've got a prime guy who's one of the 20 best at his position. He should be making prime money now and not when he's 32 and he finally gets that big, long contract. But this is it's how it works in the NHL. And I'm sure both sides knew going in once they saw, once they exchanged the numbers, they knew where it was going to wind up. I'm surprised that they, like, I don't see what the benefit was to go through the hearing knowing, you know, maybe it ends up somewhere between 5 and 6. Is that really, you know, a few hundred thousand worth potentially damaging a relationship that's already been damaged?
How much money would it take for you to have to sit in a room and listen to somebody tell you all your flaws for 2 hours? Because, like, for me, it's probably
Dude, like that, I'm married, man. That's several nights a week for me. I could do that with my eyes closed.
Oh, man.
No, we'd be bad. Like, who was the player?
He got money.
Oh, man. Who was it on the Islanders that they made him cry during the hearing was the story? Was that Tommy Salo?
Islanders made him cry.
Mike Milbury making somebody cry during arbitration.
Oh, I was thinking it was like more recent. My guess was going to be Josh Bailey, but I don't know if that's true. Let me see. Islanders. Here you go. Here's some good show stuff. Islanders cry
Yes. Mike Milbury reportedly reduced Tommy Salo to tears.
Oh, is that who it was?
Yeah.
Tommy Salo. Uh-huh. Real nice.
And this is a guy, I mean, Tommy Salo was, I mean, this is a guy who, like, committed the all-time greatest blooper in Olympic history, so it probably would take a lot to.
Oh, yeah. What did he do again in the Olympics? I was thinking he was the guy that got Forsberg.
He was the guy. Right. Yeah, no, when. No. It was 2002, I guess, when Sweden lost to Belarus, and it was like tied with a minute left, and some guy shoots a bomb from center ice and it hits Salo in the head.
Aww.
And he kind of like jumps in the air, it hits him in the head and like flips away. I mean, it was the craziest goals ever, but there it is. I'm scrolling. I found an article here as I'm researching on the fly, and yeah,
this is now a Tommy Salo podcast.
This is now a Tommy Salo podcast. Yeah, the infamous arbitration hearing with Mike Milbury, in which I should be clear. According to reports, Salo left the room to use the bathroom, and when he returned, it was clear he had been crying. According to reports, so
shouldn't all that stuff be like lawyer confidentiality stuff? Like, yeah. I feel like that shouldn't leak out. I feel like that's...
I don't want to point any fingers, but I'm just going to go ahead and say that the reports came from Mike Milbury, who probably was just like, darn it. So yeah, it would be rough. So and that's why teams typically don't go through it. So we should probably also talk about Matt Dumba, the other.
Yeah, he got a lot of money.
He got a lot of money.
I don't know.
Five years.
How I feel about Matt Dumba. I feel like that's fair, the number he got.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the number's probably a little bit high. He got $6 million cap hit. Basically $6 million bucks a year, 5 years, $30 million total. Feels a little high right now, but he's 23 and you're buying, I think, 2 UFA years. So yeah, that seems okay.
I think it's fine. You know, it's...
I mean, I don't know how Minnesota's going to work through their contract situation. Like somebody pointed out, like, Dumba's got 5 years, and when he's done that contract, they still have Parise and Suter for...
I know.
Like, years to come.
Ugh, boy.
That's... Man, we don't talk about those two deals enough in terms of, like, bad deals. Like, Brent Seabrook was a bad... Yeah, but they won 3 cups.
They were keeping it together. You know? Minnesota was
Marian
trying
Hossa,
to...
maybe was a bad call, but they won 3 cups. Like, this is, it'd be like if the Blackhawks signed 2 Marian Hossas and then didn't win anything, and now they still have like 8 years left.
I'm sure the next lockout will result in those contracts somehow coming off the books, and
this is it. I think that's like I wonder how many teams are already banking on 2020 having what were they called? The special buyouts.
The amnesty buyouts.
Compliance buyouts. Buyouts, compliance buyouts, where you don't take any cap hit, and that's going to be the get-out-of-jail-free card.
Like Matt Dumba's contract, I think, is fine, like, because it's you're buying up UFA years. Like, what if they gave that same contract to Jacob Trouba? You'd be like, yeah, sure, why not?
I think that would be a bargain for Trouba. Yeah. I think that would be fantastic. Yeah, because, I mean, if you're going to give a guy a lot of years at decent money, do it when he's 23.
Exactly.
You've got a chance. Like, there's like any deal you look at, you say, what's the upside? What's the downside? And, you know, the downside here is he might not be worth $6 million. And in a few years, he may have settled in when he's 25 or 26, and you pretty much know what he is as an NHL player. And you might go, yeah, you know, okay, second pairing guy, not worth the money. The upside is he could be more than that. He could be a first pairing guy, and you've got a bargain. And so many of these deals a guy sign when they're like 28 or 29, that it's all downside. The upside is that you get fair value, and the downside is you almost definitely don't. So I don't mind this one.
Like, I think worst case, like, it turns out that Dumba is like an expensive, really good second pairing defenseman, and if that's the case, for $6 million, like, that's,
well,
if the cap is going the way everyone says it's going, like, $6 million in 3 years isn't going to seem like a whole lot of money. I don't think, but
that might be okay second pairing money,
right?
And nothing more.
Because last year was his career year. He had 50 points. Yeah, he had 14 and 36 in 82 games. The year before that, he had 11 and 23. So, like, just say he split the difference. He was like a 42-point guy next year. Like, it's not. I don't know. I think it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I'm never going to be like, wow, what a bargain. But, like, you know, you got to pay your good young defenseman. And he's right-handed, as we all know. When you're right-handed, that's worth, like, at least another extra mil.
Exactly. Yep. All right. We've talked each other into it.
Yeah.
All right.
Like that deal makes more sense for both sides than Jacob Trouba just taking a 1 year deal. Especially like Trouba's had the neck injury. Like, I don't know. Good for him. Like, he's sticking to his guns. I always kill players for signing contracts a year early, and then, you know, because they don't want to wait that year. Like, he's like, hey, I'm worth $7 million. Pay me $7 million. Yeah.
He's doing what I always say more players should do. He's betting on himself.
You
know, we've seen players do it before. PK Subban was probably the best example. Bet on himself on a short bridge deal. Next thing you know, he's the highest paid defenseman in the league. So it works sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't. And don't come looking to me when it doesn't work and my terrible advice costs you millions of dollars. But all right, break time.
Feels like break time. We did the arbitrate. We extensively covered arbitration in both baseball and hockey. We gave you some baseball, or I should say softball and hockey reports. So it's been a thorough podcast. We mentioned Ottawa, so we checked that box. So in the second half, we're going to talk about, Sean has written a thing, and the thing is about six teams that he is confused by.
Confused.
Are they good?
Figure out.
Are they bad? I don't know.
I think I've got certain teams that I know are going to be good, and certain teams I know are going to be bad, and I'm going to be wrong on some of those teams
for sure. Oh, sure.
So I mean, already, you know, I'm probably already got terrible, but there's certain teams I've got a very wide range. You could tell me where they're going to wind up, and so I'm hoping you're going to walk me through these and sort it out for me.
Like, I know. And also the Sedins, we'll get to them too in the second half. So stick around and we will be right back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're back. It's time for Sean to become unconfused, thanks to me, the guy who absolutely knows what these six teams are going to do next season for sure.
All right. You ready?
Do it.
Help me out. All right. I'm going to start with the team. They're not the most confusing. I got a different team as kind of my most confusing, but this might be my most confusing Western Conference team. The Edmonton Oilers. They have the best player in the world. They were pretty good 2 years ago. They were bad last year, largely because their goaltender was bad. But I don't think their goaltender is bad. I think their goaltender is good and just had a bad season. On the other hand, they missed the playoffs by 17 points, and they really haven't done anything. So it's pretty much the same team. And Connor McDavid was healthy and amazing last year, and they were still awful. So same coach, same GM, same roster at this point. Are they good? Not good? Playoffs? More?
Well, the thing they have going for them is they're in the division that the expansion team won last year, so it's probably not a great division. It's going to get a little bit better because Calgary is one of your teams here. They seem to have gotten better. LA got Kovalchuk. It's still not a great division, so they kind of have that going for it. But it's just, like you said, like Connor McDavid, it's not like Connor McDavid had a bad year last year. It wasn't like he clocked in at like 83 points in 82 games. Like he was ridiculous in the second half, and they still finished 17 points out.
You wish he did. If you're an Oilers fan, you kind of like retroactively wish he had a bad year, because then you just go, well, he'll be way better this year, and that's where the extra wins come from.
Yeah, and you're right. It comes down to Cam Talbot. 2 years ago, Cam Talbot played out of his mind, played like 75 games or whatever it was, and last year wasn't great. I tend to lean towards he's more than not great than great, but he's not as bad as he was last year. He's not as good as he was 2 years ago, but I don't think they make up 17 points.
Like Cam Talbot, the part of the thing is he was great 2 years ago, but he played the most games of any goaltender in the NHL, and there were people going, is that going to wear him out? Well, last year he wasn't great, but he still played the most games, again, of any goaltender in the NHL. Now, the team was kind enough to give him the entire spring off, so maybe he's rested up in that sense. But, yeah, I mean, the Oilers are also one of those teams where you're kind of looking at the roster going, this can't be the roster on opening night. They have to, you know, they're going to make some sort of move. So maybe we just kind of put it on hold. I still feel like they're going to be a good team. And back in the playoffs and maybe even better than that. I still can't kind of get my head around how badly things went off the rails last year.
Yeah, like honestly, like if Vegas didn't make the playoffs this year coming up, would you be surprised? Like I wouldn't be. I would get
no,
it.
No.
You know what I mean?
Like
there's room. There's room to move up in that division.
There is. And the three California teams are all good, but those are all old teams. Like the Ducks. The Ducks core is old. The Kings, I mean, they're even older now with Kovalchuk, and you know, we'll see if that works out. Even the Sharks, you know, are very much in kind of win now mode, but they haven't been able to land so far any of the big names they've been chasing. So, I like the opportunity is there for the Oilers. And then let's kind of skip to the bottom because you mentioned the Calgary Flames are another team on my list, sort of. Similar in a sense, but you know, now we've got a team that has made moves, and they have made changes. Not only made the big trade with Dougie Hamilton, got rid of that whole museum bad influence that was hurting the team. They brought in James Neal, and they brought in a new coach, which is important because a lot of the talk around what went wrong in Calgary was that it was at least partly attitude, and like they weren't resilient enough. And as soon as things went bad, they all shut it down. So you bring in a new coach who's going to kick a few butts and get you back on track, except the coach they brought in has never made the playoffs.
But he's,
and in fact, Bill Peters is like Bill Peters is under 500 as an NHL coach. I don't mean he's lost more than he's won. I mean he's like actually under 500 as a points percentage, which is almost impossible in the NHL. Like how are you... Three teams are under 500 every year. How are you under 500 for a 4-year career? Like, are we like this is the guy? Like this is you looked around the league and we're like, we need to get back to the playoffs. Get me the Carolina Hurricanes head coach. I don't know. Is again, help me out here. Their goalie is 36. Was hurt last year. Still have one of the best blue lines. Have young forwards who should get better, and they're in the Pacific. So again, like the path to the playoffs seems like it's it's kind of wide open.
Well, I'm going to go against the grain. I mean, is there even grain in July? There's no grain to go against. No one's talking about this, right? It's just us. It's just two people talking into microphones about the Calgary Flames on July 23rd, whatever.
Nobody will remember this.
No one's going to. Someone throwing something back in your face that was incorrect that you said months ago? Come on. Who would ever do something like that on the internet?
Never.
In a way, I kind of feel like Edmonton has a better chance of going from out to in, even though I feel like Calgary has a better roster. And admittedly, yes, I do have my Bill Peters bias. I really think at some point this year we're going to see like Carolina take off and Calgary is going to be sputtering and we're going to be like, oh, right, now I get it. But maybe I'm wrong about that too. But I guess my way of unconfusing you, which I'm not going to be able to do because I don't know these answers either, but I'm going to say Edmonton finishes ahead of Calgary, but neither team makes the playoffs. How about that?
Wow.
How about that?
Okay. All right. So you are much more pessimistic because when I wrote this piece, I did the kind of like back and forth. They'll be good. They'll be bad. Back and forth. But then I kind of forced myself to go and make some predictions because otherwise I'm just sort of twisting in the wind and not, you know, I gotta plant a flag at some point. So I went the other way. Here's my prediction. Flames, Oilers, round two, Pacific Division Championship playoff series.
What? Not only are they getting in, they're going to be playing in the Elite Eight, as they say in
round
two. Sports.
Yes, round two. The round where the very best teams play each other. They'll be like the eighth seed and the 13th seed playing each other while the Leafs and Tampa play like the battle of 130-point teams.
That means you have one of these two teams going to the conference finals. Let's not bury that part of the story too.
I guess
my
it does.
My goodness.
Yeah, I'm gonna say one of them will be good enough to, you know, finish in the top two in the division, and will just be a good team. And one of them will be good enough that they will pull off the upset over, I'm gonna say, San Jose.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
See, like San Jose,
Battle of Alberta.
San Jose is the one team in the division I feel good about. Like San Jose in the playoffs, top three somewhere there, sure. I kind of like LA be that second team, and then it's like a completely wide open. I'm kind of here in late July, maybe selling myself on the idea of the Coyotes a little bit. I always fall in love with the Coyotes between July and August.
At some point, right?
I always do.
Yeah.
So
I think the Coyotes are definitely going to be better. Like I was looking over because one of the things I always do when I do this stuff is I look at like odds maker odds because that's a good reality check. It's a sanity check on whether you're crazy, but sometimes you see stuff and you're like, ah, like I saw a list of odds that had the Coyotes like third last in the league. I was like, I don't think so. You know, I feel like they're,
yeah, I get it.
You know, going to be better, but playoff better. I don't know, but they weren't on my confusing list. Here's a team that, cause we sort of, this is the good segue from Calgary is Bill Peters' old team, Carolina Hurricanes. I feel like this is the 10th year in a row that I've looked at the Hurricanes roster and went, yeah, this is the year they're in the playoffs.
Yep.
And every year, it doesn't happen.
And it's never close. It's never close.
It's
not really game 82. You're like, oh, they might get in. Like, no, they've been out for like 20 games now. Sorry.
Yeah. And last year was the goaltending, Scott Darling. He's still there. Have they fixed it? Peter Mrazek going to fix the goaltending?
Maybe they fixed it by jettisoning. There's a word, jettisoning. That feels like a word that you would just hear in Star Wars. They jettisoned over, but it's a real word. Jettisoning Bill Peters to Calgary. I guess they didn't jettison him there. They fired him and then he went there.
No, he kind of jettisoned himself.
Yeah.
He took off. So here's the thing. And this is my wildly optimistic side talking. Every time I look at the Hurricanes, I feel like this team reminds me of what we all thought about the Winnipeg Jets a year or two ago, where you looked at the Jets and you were like, lots of talent.
Mm-hmm.
If they can ever put it all together, don't really have the goaltending. But if that ever clicks, this team's going to be good. And then last year it finally clicked and they weren't just good. They were amazing. Now, I'm not saying the Hurricanes are going to be a 110-point team or whatever the Jets were.
120.
But they're going to be 120. but... You know, it kind of feels like, I mean, the thing now, like you look today, you talk about the Winnipeg Jets and everyone's like, yeah, of course, It's the Jets. Of course they were going to be good. Look at all that young talent. This was, you know, we all knew this was going to happen. But no, we didn't.
Right.
You know, last year, this time last year, the Jets were coming off pretty much the same sort of season the Hurricanes were coming off of. And we were all kind of like, someday for the Jets, but I'm not getting suckered in again. You know, and I don't know. The Hurricanes kind of feel like that.
One thing
I will say.
It's the same thing. If they get goaltending, yep. They can be a 110-point team.
Goaltending. Now, the difference is the Jets had Connor Hellebuyck, who was always a top prospect, top young goaltender that people thought was going to be very good someday. And, you know, when he finally flipped the switch, look out. And that happened last year. And the Hurricanes don't have that anywhere. So, and then the other thing with the Hurricanes is, you know, they got this new owner comes in, fresh ideas, new ways of doing things. Let's get crazy. But his let's get crazy was he couldn't find a GM, had to hire the old, you know, the old guy had been kicking around for years and years, brings back an ex-player as the coach and talks a lot about heart and compete level and chemistry. So I don't know. He doesn't really sound like he's disrupting very much to me. So I don't know. Like, should I get suckered in again here?
I am.
On the Hurricanes?
I'm 100% all in. I'm all in. So here's the thing. I hear this in baseball. Like, if you're a free agent or you're whatever, you come to the Boston Red Sox. Like, you need that first year to kind of adjust to playing in, like, a pressure-packed baseball-crazy town. And I think Scott Darling just had the same thing in Raleigh, you know? He went to a place where there was a lot of pressure on him. He's a number one guy. You know, there's a lot of win-now pressure there, you know, because they hadn't been in the playoffs in 8 years. And, you know, now he's got that first year under his belt. He's got a new coach
coming.
Went
from the relative anonymity of Chicago.
Yeah, you know, like Chicago. Like, does anybody watch hockey in Chicago? Like, he's going from Chicago to Raleigh. That's a big transformation for the man. So let's let him adjust, and we'll see what he does this year.
It would not shock me at all if, like, Scott Darling had a really good season.
Right.
It's gold. Who knows? Like, I don't love the fact that they're going into the season with these two goalies. And it feels like a situation where they should have been more aggressive and been like, no, we need to get the best goalie on the offseason market. But yeah, it's goaltending.
I love it.
All right.
By the way, I guess JD Martinez really didn't have to adjust to Boston. He has like 50 home runs with the All-Star break. But for the most part, not everybody can be that. Everyone, you know, you need a little time to cook. Marinate, whatever.
Speed through a couple more, and then you can help me on these, and then maybe we'll do reader questions, and then we'll get the hell out of here. Florida Panthers, help me on the Florida Panthers. Good young team. Two good goalies.
The thing you brought up in your thing, I thought was kind of the key, is like Roberto Luongo is now at an age where, you know, he's still playing at a high level, but he's at an age where it could all end at any time. You could probably say that too the last 3 years about him, but. I think if Roberto Luongo plays well, yeah, he's 39 or 38. He's 39.
I think he's 39. I think he turned 39. I think he was 38 last year.
My God,
he's been injured. He's at that age where, I mean, he's still an amazing goalie, but when you get to that age, goaltending or anywhere, like a lot of times the decline when it comes isn't gradual.
Exactly.
You're not great at 38 and very good at 39 and good at 40 and average at 41. You might be great in November and then terrible in December. And, you know, James Reimer's a good backup. They've got all these, like, they've got so much young talent and like, in key spots. It's not just, like, their third and fourth lines are young. They've got, you know, the top of their lineup is young. So even if they don't change anything, you'd expect them to be better. They missed the playoffs by, like, a point last year. They were already pretty good last year. And you talk about the Pacific being a bad division. The Atlantic is top heavy, and we think those top three teams are going to be real good, but then there's four teams that could all be train wrecks, which in theory is a lot of easy points to feast on. I guess where I came down on the Panthers is I'm having a hard time getting out of anything different than last year, which is finish fourth and you have to fight off the Metro teams for a wild card spot.
So it's like Tampa, Toronto, I'm
probably Boston.
I'm still, you know, lukewarm on Boston
is,
but yeah. You have Pittsburgh, and then it's like the rest of the East. I mean, obviously it's 3-3, then you have like the battle for the wild card, but like, who would you say is the fourth best team in the Metro at this point? Columbus? Can Florida be better than Columbus? I don't know.
Yeah, because Columbus is the other team on my list that from the East. I had Dallas, who I just every year I think Dallas is going to be good. Jim Neal certainly seems to think they're going to be good because they're in on every player, every big star. They weren't good last year. They've missed the playoffs a couple years, bringing in a rookie coach from college, which tends not to work. And they're in the Central. So is Dallas in the playoffs next year?
I'm going to say Florida, yes. I don't really have any sort of real argument for it because obviously those three teams are on paper way better. But I don't know. I just think Florida, it's Luongo. If Luongo plays 55 games, they'll get in the playoffs. How about that? But for Dallas?
Florida is another one of those teams where if they break through and I could see them like passing Boston and everyone being like, yeah, of course Florida was going to be good.
Exactly.
And then
right.
This is something, by the way, that really, whenever I do something like this, really hits me. I don't think hockey fans understand how much this stuff changes year to year. Because I wrote like in my intro to this piece, I wrote about how like this time last year, we all thought the Oilers and the Blackhawks were going to be cup contenders. And the odds makers had the Oilers as co-favorites for the Stanley Cup on opening night. They had the Blackhawks fourth last year with Pittsburgh. They had the Blackhawks fourth. But I've got all these people like tweeting me and they're like, hello, who thought the Oilers and Blackhawks were going to be good last year? And it's like, dude, just about everybody. Like, you know, I know now after a year, it seems obvious. And you're like, no, nobody thought they were going to be good. Yeah, they did. The people whose job it is to make money off of this thought they were going to be good. And I'm not suggesting odds makers are always right, obviously, but they don't take teams that everyone agrees is going to miss the playoffs and make them cup favorites.
Well, I will push back on that because I think odds makers pick the odds that they think will get the money bet evenly on both sides. You know what I mean? They don't necessarily maybe think Chicago's the fourth best team, but
really do that. That's kind of a misconception. There is some of that, but that's more on like the day-to-day, you know, if you're setting a line for a football game, sure. But when you're doing futures, nobody's expecting a flood of money to come in on NHL futures. So you're not trying to lure people in on the Oilers or somebody like that. Like I get maybe for the real high volume teams, maybe Chicago, maybe a Toronto, they nudge up a little bit. But odds makers aren't in the business of getting equal money on both sides. They're in the business of getting the most money in their pocket that they can. And that means they're happy under certain cases to have unbalanced bets coming in if they think they're on the right side of it.
Got to bet both sides. So wait, Dallas,
that's the,
Dallas
that's
I'm out
the,
on.
The Dave Lozo strategy for you just bet. If you bet
no,
on
I'm
both
the opposite.
Sides,
like if I'm in like an NCAA tournament pool and it gets down to the point where like I have a chance to win it, and so whatever, let's say Villanova's playing Duke in the final and I have Villanova winning it all in my pool, and it works out where like Villanova is laying 6.5. I'm not going to bet Duke +6.5 to hedge. Like I'm really not a hedger when it comes. I don't like doing that. Like I made my picks. I'm going to stick with them. That's kind of what I do. But like it doesn't really come up all that often because I don't really win NCAA pools all the time. But you know what I mean? Like I don't like the idea of, you know, I'm in it to win it. No hedging.
It's moral weakness to hedge.
Yeah,
I like it. Yeah. All right. So my last team, because we talked about them and then I jumped off, and the reason jumped off to come back last is because this is the one team that I'm completely Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'll read what I wrote is I said, I don't think there's a team in the league with a wider range of plausible outcomes. If you came back from the future a year from now, and obviously my first question would be, how did the Columbus Blue Jackets do? you could tell me they won the Stanley Cup and I'd be like, yep. And you could tell me their season was a total disaster. Tortorella got fired. They traded half the team. They finished in the bottom five of the league. And I'd be like, yep, I have no. And part of it is because the Panarin situation and Sergei Bobrovsky doesn't have a contract yet. So there's still some balls in the air. And I assume it'll be more clear on opening night. But I'm completely out to lunch on these guys because I think the talent is there to win a cup. And they almost, I mean, they were up 2-0, one lucky bounce away from being up 3-0 on the Capitals, the eventual champions. And yet, it's also the Blue Jackets, and their best player wants out, and they've never won a playoff series, and their goaltender needs a new deal. And oh, by the way, in a season where there could be a lot of volatility and challenges, they've got John Tortorella as their coach, a guy who flips his lid over off-season quotes from departing free agents. What's he going to do if they lose four of their first six games?
Okay.
Help.
First of all, I just want to say that I'm really picturing like a portal opening up in your living room and like me jumping through it with like my clothes all tattered. And I'm like, I'm from 2019, Sean. I have a message about nuclear war. And you're like, what's Sergei Bobrovsky's save percentage this season? Just tell me. Right. Just tell me the save percentage. Don't spoil it for me. Sean, we have to save the world. So here's what I need you to do. Did they trade Panarin or no? Yeah. Just tell me what they did with Panarin.
Anything?
I'm going to say playoffs. I'm with you.
Okay. Playoffs like wild card playoffs, or
I think they can be top
challenge
three.
For the division playoffs.
I think they're going to be up there. I don't know. I'm trying to get a feel for Pittsburgh at this point because their time is moving forward on all those guys. But Columbus, I think, is going to finish top three in the division. I'm not prepared this early stage of the offseason to give you a number, but I'll say between one and three. I think they're better than a wild card team.
So top three. So we're above wild card.
I think I just called them the fourth best team in the division like 6 minutes ago. But now I'm moving them up between one and three.
There you go.
All right.
I feel better now.
Yeah, because I feel like I didn't really help on any of these. I feel like
I'm gonna
spread your
contact
confusion.
Sportsnet and have them take the article down because I'm no longer confused on those teams. And I'll just replace it with six teams I'm confused about. This should be part one of a five-part series.
All right,
it just builds up to me going like, I'm pretty sure the Lightning will be good though.
This just and now it's time for Sean's lukewarm takes. Sean, what do you feel about Tampa? Could win the cup, might not win the cup. This has been Sean's lukewarm takes.
There's we'll
get a little song.
A lot of different directions this could go.
All right, let's do some questions because we got to be out of here in 6 minutes today. Probably see that by the time remaining on the podcast. Mick Cloud. Wants to know, did the Avs just get lucky last year, or are they actually kind of good? They're like the seventh team that I would have put into your story because I feel about them the way you feel about like other teams, where I feel like maybe they're not as good as they were last year, but I don't know.
I feel like my answer to his question is yes.
Yeah.
To both of those things. Yes, they were a little lucky, but yes, they're good. I would not, like, if I was making my picks right now, I would not have the Avalanche in the playoffs. But I would not have them, you know, they're going to look more like last year's team than 2 years ago when they were terrible. But if they finished the season with 90 points and missed the playoffs by 5 points, I think that would feel about right to me.
Bang Bang Bart, which I believe is a reference to The Simpsons based on the name and the avatar. I can't quote The Simpsons like I can like Seinfeld and Friends and 30 Rock. I don't know why. Like, I love The Simpsons, but like, I just kind of... I don't know. I don't have the same repertoire that other people do. What's the ideal number of teams, and will we one day have a 40-team league? At what point do we stop
one
expanding?
Day? Yeah. When you run out of markets willing to pay $650 million. I mean, that's the honest answer. Yeah. I think, you know, the league, in fairness, we hadn't had expansion in 17 years or whatever. So, I mean, they're I don't know. I don't – right now there's not – 40 markets out there that can support NHL teams, even if you add, you know, and put another team in Toronto or something like that. So one day, do we get to 40 teams? I think one day we do, maybe even internationally.
Yeah, but not you'd have to go international
soon.
For sure. Well, technically we are
the thing
international
is,
already.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, like go over to Europe or somewhere. I mean, the thing is, this is, you know, the NHL, you know, you could, baseball could be 40 team league. NFL could do it. You know, in terms at least of interest. This is where the NHL to some extent gets hurt a little bit by the fact that they seem very satisfied to just get as much money as possible out of people who already like hockey and not to try to bring in new fans. I will say this, when he says the ideal number of teams, because this always comes up, there's always people who want contraction.
24.
There's always people who say,
24,
get
Sean.
It down to 24.
Yep.
Get it down to...
That's the number.
And, yeah, you know, maybe, but there's a bad argument that gets made is people say that, you know, the problem, you know, part of the problem with the league is the talent's too watered down because there's too many teams. So you got to contract and then the game will be better and it'll be more fun to watch hockey because the teams will all be better. And first of all, that I'm not convinced that that the premise is true, that there's not enough talent. Because there's, so I mean, compare now to when it was a 21-team league and almost all the players were Canadian. There were only like three regions in the U.S. producing hockey players. Europe wasn't sending many guys over. You compare that to now, and there's nine more teams, 10 more teams, but so much more talent flooding in, and there's so much, the development's better. But the other piece of it is, if you just want entertaining hockey, you should want a 40-team league. Because hockey is a game where bad players making mistakes is what makes hockey fun. Like, contracting down to 24 teams, and every team has now got, you know, great, even their third line and third pairing are amazing. Hockey played at its highest level by the best possible players is not always a very entertaining game, at least when the stakes aren't high. Like a November game between two all-star teams that finishes 2-1 isn't great. So don't, you know, this idea that we need to contract, you know, business-wise or marketing, whatever, okay, that's a different thing. But if you want, you know, if you're looking back and going, hey, we had 20 teams in the 80s and it was great, you want to get back to that, you need to get back to what we had in the 80s, which is defensemen who couldn't skate backwards and, you know, were completely outclassed whenever Gretzky and Lemieux were on the ice. We need more teams, not fewer.
Well, on that note, it is time to shut it down. There's a couple other questions. One guy wanted to know why I hated the St. Louis Blues. I don't. Going to St. Louis this weekend coming up. I'm going to bask in all things St. Louis. Another guy wanted to know why I haven't gotten a copy of your book when Greg Wyshynski has, but, you know, whatever. You made your choice. You wanted him to get it, not me. That's
I should point out, nobody has a copy of the book because it doesn't exist yet. I think some people, I think Greg may have pirated it off like a torrent site or something.
He got it off Kazaa. He was downloading porn, porn music and books.
I hate that when you get the wrong file. Wait a second. This isn't the new Drake album. Oh, God damn.
All right, so we got to go. We got a tight schedule today here in the studio. So thank you for everybody who reads and listens and submits the questions. Pre-order Sean's book on Amazon, right? That's the place where you pre-order books.
Amazon. Anywhere else. I think it should be everywhere, but yeah, Amazon's good. Pre-order it. If you've already pre-ordered, pre-order it again.
Pre-order.
Just to be safe.
Reorder. Yeah. Pre-order.
Right.
De-order.
Because, I mean, the first one might not be good. Right.
Yeah, the second one might have more stuff in it. You never know. Yeah, you lose one, you got the other.
Be like the Carolina Hurricanes. You need a good backup. Two solid options, then you go with the hot hand.
Yeah, perfect. The Mrazek of books. So thanks, and we'll be back for the season finale of Biscuits Calling a Hockey Podcast on Tuesday is the planned time as of right now, and I see no reason to change it.
Next Tuesday.
Right?
Yes. Next Tuesday, not tomorrow. Tuesday.
Tomorrow, the 31st.
Probably won't be enough NHL news over the next 24 hours to.
Yeah.
But hopefully, you know, maybe there'll be another arbitration hearing and.
Come back next week and we'll talk about the Crosson trade, which is for sure going to happen. So long, everybody. Thanks. Bye. We love you.
Bye bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.